your turn to be afraid.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us here on Nerds from the Crypt, where we interview indie creators about their upcoming and ongoing horror projects. We also review your favorite and sometimes not so favorite horror movies. Thank you to every single one of you who listens to our episodes. And if you are a new listener, I want to say thank you and welcome to the Crypt. For today's episode, I'm welcoming back an old friend of the podcast, Dan Schmidt. Dan was with us back in episode 77 talking about his debut 160-page graphic novel, Worms Crawl In. It features Delaine, a spirit medium who hits rock bottom when her only friend is murdered. She meets the ghost of Marco, who is trapped in a rotting corpse, and find out that they're both looking for revenge against the same person that killed both Marco and Delaine's friend. Together, they embark on the quest for blood that turns into a journey of self-discovery and redemption. Dan is returning to us today to talk about his follow-up 90-page graphic novel, Worms Crawl Out. This story continues to follow Delaine during the events of Worms Crawl In, as she is devastated about her failure to protect Marco. She is aided by her companion Jordan and Parker as she descends into the darkest pit of the underworld while they battle a horrifying threat above. With that being said, let's go ahead and join our interview as we're talking with Dan.
Hey, thank you for having me on. I think my first book, you were my first podcast that I was on, so it's fitting that I'm back again for my next book.
Awesome. That's I love hearing that. So yeah, so like we said, you have a previous book, Worms Crawl In, and that was that's been 2 years, 3 years?
Yeah, it's probably been about 3 years at this point when I first released Worms Crawl In. So I'm back again, and my new book is called Worms Crawl Out.
For those of the listeners who have not had a chance to listen to that episode, do you want to just give them an update on recap of what the first book was about?
Yeah, sure. First book, Worms Crawl In, is about woman Delaine, and she is a paranormal sensitive, so she can see and talk to ghosts. She connects with the ghost of Marco, who is one of the other characters. He's a criminal who his soul was taken from him and put inside of a corpse, so he's essentially like a living zombie. They both end up going on a mission against the criminal element that kind of ruined her life and also trapped Marco in this corpse situation. So on their journey, they change their motivations, where instead of going for revenge, they find that they need to go around and rescue these other souls that are trapped inside of dead corpses as well. So they go through this whole adventure, and that's kind of where the new book kind of picks up. This is a little bit different, as it's not a sequel and it's not a prequel or anything like that. It actually takes place at a specific moment in Worms Crawl In, and then just really expands on that moment and builds onto it. So it's almost like a deeper dive into it versus like I said, a prequel or a sequel.
Aren't those called like side quills or something like that?
There's a weird
name for that. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that. As you're reading comic books or graphic novels, or even in movies, there's always like scene breaks and things like that. Mm-hmm. So this takes place during a specific break in the first book, and then, like I said, kind of expands on those events and really builds it out and gives it more context. Don't need to read the first one necessarily to enjoy the second one, but it just adds a lot more depth to it, of course, if you read the first one.
And before we go ahead and jump into the second one, I guess we want to go ahead and catch up with you as well.
Sure.
What have you been up to other than writing the new story?
Oh, so I try to keep busy. Of course, like you said, spent about a year or so writing the second book, Worms Crawl Out, with my co-writer, Matthew Waterman, and then spent the rest of the time, you know, doing all the art and the production for the book. So I'm a creator who does writing. I also do all the art and I do the lettering, all the preprint production and all the stuff to get it out the door. So I do it all. So I've been working on that. I also partner with a couple of other creators. So currently I'm lettering the book for Immortal Era by Ed Davis. So that's a really cool book. The premise is essentially something happened and nobody on Earth can die anymore. Everybody's immortal. So it's about group of rebels who are trying to restore death back to humanity. So of course you could realize you'd see how they would come with some resistance to their adventures. So it's a really interesting premise, a great book. Ed does a great job on that. And I also did a few other stories for various other publications. I've worked with another creator, Ben Krieger, on his book called Frontier Forever, Tomorrow's Yesterday. It's an anthology sci-fi book. Really cool. You guys should check it out. And then just doing other little short stories here and there. So I did one horror short story about college kids who go out into the forest to do some experiments, and then they find that the bugs that they were looking for were much more terrifying than they expected. So that's kind of a fun, like, EC type story. So yeah, just working on projects like that, and then of course getting my own book out. So
you seem like you've had a really busy couple of three years now.
yeah time goes by fast.
Yeah. That's what I was freaking out about, because I saw that you posted about the new one, and I'm like, oh, we're gonna bring you back on. And then I was looking for the stuff. I'm like, wow. The episode that just came out was episode 105. You were on episode 77, and
wow.
We took a year break from releases of episodes. A couple of months ago, we came back, but it was a year break. So 30 episodes, and we weren't really that consistent. That's why I said at the beginning, we're trying to get a little bit more consistent on being able to get episodes on, maybe not on a weekly basis, but at least at least once a month. Sometimes you'll get, sometimes people will get three or four episodes at a time, but still, that's what, 38 episodes between then and now. So yeah, it's crazy that much time has passed since we last talked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's a good thing about recordings too, right? If you have a library of episodes, you can record like three or four today and then just release them over time.
That's what sometimes happens. I actually have a couple episodes that are ready to get edited and go out. But then you know how life comes around and you're like, I need to get to that editing. But life is not letting me get to the editing, and then the stress comes out. I'm like, oh man, I really need to get to the editing to get those episodes out. I need those, especially like this one's, and you have a Kickstarter. I try to get them out as soon as possible to be able to still hit it within the campaign. Sometimes we come into towards the later, so no matter what I do, it's not gonna come out. But it's still a try. It's still a good try.
Absolutely.
Looking at what you sent me for Worms crawl out, I have to say I still really enjoy your the way you do your art. It still looks awesome. I think I know I talked to you about that the first time, is the horror images in the comics. They look superb. They look awesome. I say awesome a lot. That's my catchphrase or whatever, but that's just the way they make me feel. The way you draw the gore and all that, it's amazing.
Thank you. And I like to think that, you know, I've improved since the first book as well. you know, as an artist, as a creator, always trying to improve and make a better product for people. So, yeah, I put, of course, a lot of work into it. tried to take my time on it. So the first one was 160 pages, which was, in hindsight, very ambitious for a first project for me to put out like that. This one is 90 pages, so a little bit shorter. Still a pretty good size book, but gave me the opportunity to kind of, you know, slow down a little bit and really work on the details, the design, and all that. You can see that it's a black and white book, but it has gray tones. So it kind of has that the old movie feel, I hope, of the black and white. Just something that I think really helps with the horror side of it. Color is great. A lot of people like color, but I'm a fan of black and white, that kind of, you know, old movie look. So.
Oh, definitely. I think I told you the first time that I used to not really enjoy black and white comics. But as I've gotten more into reading the comic book, and especially in reviewing and talking to creators, I get to see more of on the creative side of it. So I actually enjoy, or I actually appreciate the black and white comic book now more than I used to. And I was just talking to, about 2 weeks ago, I was talking to a creator that they have a comic book called Kryptonals, which is a comic book about cryptids versus creepypasta creatures.
Oh, nice.
And he was telling me that when he got the idea, he really wanted it to be in color. And he hired an artist and all that, and the artist looked at it and he's like, no, this needs to be black and white. And be like, no, but I hired you to be, so you can do it in color. Like, and he pretty much told him, like, no, I'm drawing this for you. It's going to be black and white. And then he said, he's still bummed out about it, but he's like, you know what? He made the right call, because at the end of the day, the story itself called for it to be black and white.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting that the artist saw that and it went through like that. Good for them.
So when you draw this in black and white, do you start it with black and white with a gray tone, or do you do it in color and then kind of do something to make it that black and white tone?
No, I just I do all the line work, of course, straight black and white line work, and then instead of doing it in color, I try to actually limit myself. The first book I only used two tones of gray. In this one, I got a little more complex. I used three tones of gray. So I just put the gray in after I do the line work, of course, with a computer. I feel like it, like I said, kind of gives it that movie kind of feel. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, too, I think for a lot of other independent creators, it's really hard to try and match what's coming out from the big, how many bigs do we have now? Big two, big three?
I don't even know anymore.
The big two, and then there's like another tier of like other comic publishers.
Well, there's big, because there's big ones that are crowdfunding too now.
Yeah, you're right. You know, they have the money to really put a great product out with really high talent. For indie creators, it can be really hard, and coloring is one of those things that, you know, if you're going to do color, it's got to look really good. So when you're working on a limited budget, like I am, you know, maybe have to make some decisions about, do I put things in color? Do I not do color? Does the story serve itself better with black and white? All those kind of considerations.
I remember who I was talking to. It was talking about the process of creating the comic books and all that. And I brought you up because I told him that you had done every single thing on your first book. You know, the story, the artwork, the coloring, the lettering. And they're like, wow. I go, I guess they were like, I guess when you really wanted to get it out, you're going to do whatever you need to do to get it out. And I'm like, yeah, that was pretty much the story. He wanted to do it, and he did it. He did what he needed to do to get it out.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and a lot of that stuff is learnable. It's discoverable. It takes practice. You know, I look kind of back on the first one, and of course there's things I can improve on now, but it's in the past, it's done, it's out there. Mm-hmm. So I make those improvements on, you know, all of my projects since then. Yeah.
So let's jump into the new one. So Worm Crawls Out right now is currently on Kickstarter, running its campaign about halfway through, right?
Yes, yes.
What do you want to share with us about the essence of this new book?
Yeah, so I spoke a little bit about it earlier, about how it connects with the first book. So this one is about Delane, that's the main character, and Marco, of course. In this book, his soul has gone missing, and Delane kind of blames herself for what has happened. So she goes on this epic journey to the underworld to get him back, find where he is, and bring his soul back. And of course, like in the first book, she has two companions, Jordan and Parker, so they're kind of helping her along the way, and all that. They have their own problems, of course. Jordan's history kind of comes back to haunt him, literally in some cases. And, you know, so it puts the entire effort, what they're doing, their adventure at risk. So I kind of like the first one. I like to put a lot of... I guess like emotion and other thought elements into it, not just a surface level kind of horror story. So it's a little bit philosophical, existential, a little bit of an experiment with loss, friendship, anger, forgiveness, like all those kind of emotions and things like that. So there's I like to think there's a lot more to it than just, like I said, people going off into the woods and being chased by monsters. For Worms Crawl Out, like I said, kind of want to make sure that the story's right. I spent about a year or so trying to get the story right with my co-writer, Matthew Waterman. He's actually a novelist. He's written two novels himself, and got him on board to really help me flesh it out, organize it, and put the right emphases and character development and all that other stuff in. I don't know that people realize how much of an art form writing is, and that may seem like a kind of a silly statement, but it's more than just like coming up with an idea and then typing things into a computer. There's just like drawing, it's an art form. There's mechanics behind it, and all kinds of things to make it go right. So like I said, wanted to make the story good, so brought him in to make sure that I was doing everything right, to get his ideas into the story and all that stuff. And he did a fantastic job.
And how did you all end up working together?
I actually know him from my childhood. We kind of grew up together. He went the route of writing. And of course I went the route of doing art and things like that. And then, you know, for these projects, just decided, hey, what if we kind of collaborated a little bit and, you know, made something awesome.
Anything as far as in the background, in the process of making this version, is there anything new that you did other than bring the co-writer in?
So I also brought in, towards the end of the project, probably should have got him involved a little sooner, but I went out to find an editor to really help with kind of the mechanics of it, the basic proofreading, right? Want to make sure that there's no misspellings, that the commas are correct, and all that stuff. So he, Joseph Cervelin, is my editor. Did a lot of that proofreading, tightened it up, gave me a lot of suggestions about different things. So he's been really great too. So that's kind of the difference between the first one, is just, you know, bringing a couple other people in to really make the product mm-hmm. better. So I hope that shows with the final book.
Now, this is going to be, you said it was 90 pages. Are you going to release it all together like you did on the first one, or is it going to be in chapters?
Yeah, I'm going to release it all as 90 pages. Personally, I'm a fan of bigger books. Mm-hmm. I know that the formula for these types of things is to release everything in like single issues and then collect it in a trade. But for me, the story comes out naturally as a graphic novel, as a big story. So I'm going to release it as a big story. Yeah.
So talking about the story itself, there's a couple of ghosts that appear. How did you come up with the different ghosts or the different types of ghosts, I guess? I don't know what you would call them, types or just character, ghost characters.
Yeah, sure. So this story, this book has a very strong supernatural paranormal element to it. I was inspired in part by local legends in the area that I live in, Pennsylvania. So at least one, two, three of the paranormal stuff, three of the ghosts, I think, are based on real legends around this area. So if there's anybody out there from Pennsylvania and you read the story, pay attention because you might recognize some of the places that I'm talking about. Wow. Some of the legends that are out there. And I think especially for this genre for paranormal, mm-hmm. You know, people really like that kind of realism, the reference to life in a way. You know, of course, there's all those reality shows out there. What is it? Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, all those things. So there's a fascination with the paranormal and with real life locations like that.
The that Hankin ghost. My grandpa used to tell me he was born in and raised in Mexico, and deep in Mexico in the Sierra Madre, where you have mountains and stuff. Right? That's where you grow up. Well, he would tell us that one time he had to go into town and at night because one of his brothers was getting real sick, so he needed to go get the doctor. And he had totally forgotten about this legend of this tree that overhangs over a cliff, right? And he was walking, and supposedly you would see two things. You would see an ember at the base of the tree, and then you would see someone hanging from the tree itself. And he says he was just going, and he saw an ember, and I don't know why, he decided, like, hey, I'm going to go talk to that person.
Did he look in the tree?
He said he kept going to the tree, but what happened is, as he was walking towards the tree, the ember kept going, getting further, even though it wasn't moving as he was walking. So no matter what, he couldn't reach the ember. And then all of a sudden, it was behind him, and he's like, I have no idea what was going on. And then later on, he remembered that they had told him that someone did get hanged there on that tree, and the legend is that the person you would see hanging from the tree would not only just be hanging, but he would be like kind of like swinging back and forth, like not swinging like a dead swing, but kind of like like a Tarzan kind of thing between trees. Yeah. Oh, wow. And so that's why I'm saying the story, the way you had there, kind of reminded me of that story.
That's great. Yeah, so in that hanged ghost that you're talking about in Worms Crawl Out, based on a legend around Pennsylvania, supposed to pull up to this covered bridge, and I think it's honk your horn or something like that, and the hanged man is supposed to appear in the covered bridge. Probably a questionable decision, but I took my 10-year-old son with me. We went to the covered bridge. We looked around, didn't see anything, but we saw the bridge and drove through it. So it was kind of a cool thing to do. Yeah, but those kind of ghost stories are so personal and exciting to experience. A ghost experience that I had in real life was where I grew up, there's a lot of Revolutionary War monuments and things like that, battlefields. So I'd gone there to this one battlefield at night with a couple of my friends, and it's way off in the country in the rural areas, so there's like nobody around. And one of the things we saw was at night in the woods at a distance, there was a bluish light that kind of went through the forest in the background, and all of us, three of us, could hear the sound of a very lightly, like a flute playing. Mm. So if you remember from history classes, they typically had musicians or things like that marching with the armies, right? A drummer and a flute and things like that. So it was really creepy to see this blue light out of nowhere and hear that sound in a Revolutionary War battlefield. So it kind of freaked us out, but very cool experience.
Man, I can totally just sit here and talk about ghost stories and stuff like that. That happened more than you can think. I need to check. I would recommend if you have any more stories, I would recommend you reaching out to one of my friends. They've actually been on the podcast as well, but it's called I have a strange story. I have to check if they're still doing the podcast. They had stopped for a bit and then they came back. I'm not sure if they're still doing it or not. But nice. it's just them either reading stuff like that or getting people to come on and talk about their stories. And it's a really good time. I don't want to give away too much of from what I've seen already, but I know you only gave me the first chapter. I don't want to give away too much from that, but what else, is there anything else you want to go ahead and talk about that, or do you prefer to go ahead and talk about the campaign?
Yeah, I'll do a little bit of both. I mentioned before that Delane goes on this journey to get Marco's soul back. She goes to the underworld, which is essentially equates to places like hell. However, in my mind, that is a it's very specific to Western religious beliefs, right? Hell. There are many other references to the underworld, to the land of the dead in many different cultures. So this isn't just an experience of one perspective. That I tried to build in cultural references to a lot of other underworlds, hells, and things like that from all over. So this is more than just like one kind of view of it. It's looking at humanity more broadly and how all these different cultures see the underworld. So I tried to work that into the story as well.
The thing that I enjoy more than anything is when I know that there's what's it called, research being done behind the story, the comic, because I'm one of those people that as I'm reading something, I actually go and research it myself. So to know that, like, oh, cool, you know, like just to see that extra step that is taken to make sure that everything is genuine, or at least, you know, based on something. I don't even know if I'm saying the right thing. It's not necessarily that it's based on something, but that you did your research to make it as real as possible, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. It just makes it feel so much more more real.
Yeah. My only regret is that I didn't push it far enough. I wish I had gone a little bit further in getting all those different references in and building out that mythology a little more.
I have an idea for a comic, and it's based on Mexican folklore. I can't draw. I've tried to learn and I can't do it. And I'm more of I have the idea of the story. So I need to get with somebody that like you that knows how to draw that and can show me the ropes and stuff like that. But this is the kind of stuff because what I do is I normally will go in there and like, oh man, I need to learn more about this, like, and try to make it more real. But that's kind of the research that I get into and probably end up staying awake like till like 2 a.m. trying to figure out like, oh, is this real or did this happen or like that? And that's the kind of stuff that keeps me awake in the middle of the night. Not that I'm scared, but that I want to learn more.
Yeah, absolutely. Like one of the things that I've discovered is that a lot of times real life history is much more terrifying and horrible than the things that we can just come up with ourselves. Like if you go back and look at where vampirism and all that stuff, how that came to be, the real life facts of how that happened is more interesting in many ways than the lore that we see in fiction today.
Yeah.
Just the bizarrity.
Are you talking about the Dracul, or you're talking more about the whole actual legend, like of people, like in Europe?
Yeah. A lot of that stuff about you know, Dracula and the history, you know, Vlad and all that stuff, but also just back in those times, people didn't understand death and and decomposition. So you've probably heard all those stories about how back in the day they would put, you know, they would bury people in the ground, but they would put like an iron cage on top of the gravesite because they were afraid people were going to come up through the dirt, or they would put the bell in there because if they weren't dead, they'd have to ring the bell. So there's all this stuff that people didn't understand. I think it was during the plague times. When people would die and start to decompose, naturally their skin would start to dry up and recede and all that stuff. So their fingernails looked like they were growing, but they weren't. But it looked like it. So same thing with the teeth. You know, the when they would die, you know, the mouth and the gums and everything would start to really pull back and recede. So it looked like their teeth were growing. So all those kind of weird facts in history kind of add to the bizarrity of what would eventually become.
Yeah, vampires. I was going to say, I heard about that part because of the Lore podcast. I don't know if you ever heard that one. It's
no.
Really, really good podcast. Does really deep dive into a lot of different folklore and stories around the world. And one of the very first episodes was about that, about how they would exhume, what was it? They were dying of like anemia, or people were getting sick with anemia. So they started thinking it was, maybe someone from the grave or got up and, you know, so they would exhume the bodies and they found them like that. They found like longer fingernails, which really it wasn't. It was just their skin receding, like you said, and they had like fangs or whatever, but it's the same thing, right? And that's where the that's where the concept of the vampire came from. And then later on, of course, the whole Dracula kind of got tied into that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, history is full of just bizarre facts like that that are many times just stranger than the things that we can come up with in our own imaginations.
Wanted to talk to you about that other ghost that we see there. I think as much as I like the hanging ghost, we don't see a lot from her, but I think you called it the knitting ghost.
Yes. Also based on local legend in Pennsylvania, and I was able to drive down the dirt road to where the house was. Didn't see the knitting ghost, but that's the legend, that you would look upon this house, and in the second floor, there's the ghost of a woman sitting there and knitting. So, of course, worked that into the book, into the story, and the knitting ghost is actually an important part of this story, kind of gives Delane some very important information, puzzling to Delane at the time, but it makes sense later on about what she has to do, so... all the ghosts kind of have an important role to play in the story.
What I like about some of these legends is that some of the stories, some of the legends you hear, it's just about the ghost being a terrifying creature or just being there to scare the crap out of you. But just in a couple of panels, you gave one splash, I guess, you gave a really detailed and sad story to this ghost.
I think I've posted that one online in various places. You know, it's funny, in movies montages are kind of like a joke, but they work really well in comics still. So I did this montage essentially of the horror that happened to this woman while she was alive, that really drove her to be stuck in the afterlife. So not necessarily panels, but just this mash of images and feelings that kind of illustrates where this ghost, how she ended up being the dead knitting ghost in the house.
So let's talk about the campaign itself. As we're recording, there's still about 15 days to go. You've already, it looks like you already hit your goal. But of course, people still need to help out as much as they can. Do you want to talk about what are the possible rewards people can get for helping out the campaign?
Yeah, sure. So the campaign ends at the end of August. I think it's like September 1st or 2nd is the official date. So still have about a couple weeks left. For me, as a independent creator, where I do a lot of the stuff myself, for me, it's not so much about the money. Of course, it's necessary to keep me creating. But for me, it's really more about getting the book out to readers, people who would enjoy the book. So even though, like you said, has made its funding goal, which I'm super happy about, I really want people to read this book. So I'm still putting the word out. I'm trying to advertise it to get people to take a look at it. There's different tiers for the rewards. One is the standard book, standard cover. Two is both books, Worms Crawl In and Worms Crawl Out, in one package. So I can send that out. I have a limited edition cover. So there's only going to be about 25 copies printed total. And that'll be like a holographic cover, black with kind of like that shiny iridescent holographic look to it. And then I believe the other tier is the standard book of Worms Crawl Out, but it also includes a original page of art from the book. So you can get on 11x17 a real page nice. That I created from the book. I'll mail it all out. You can put it on your wall, frame it, whatever you want to do with it.
And there's only three of those left, looks like. Oh, six left, I'm sorry.
Yeah, one of the things I did in this campaign, which is a little bit different than what I've done in the past, I teamed up with, I mentioned the other book, Immortal Era. So I teamed up with Ed Davis on that. And if you back both books for physical tiers, issue 8 of Immortal Era and Worms Crawl Out will include a very special double-sided trading card that has my cover on one side and his cover on the other side. So it'll be a cool thing that you can get.
That is so cool. And as far as, let's say, the future for the story, are you still thinking it's going to continue, or do you think are you not thinking that far ahead? I feel like you're one of those people that already kind of have something planned out if you're going to keep going or not.
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. When I finished the first book, Worms Crawl In, I didn't intend to make a second book for that story. But being that I got such good feedback about Worms Crawl In, I was like, well, let's give it one more try. There's still a story to be told. So went ahead and put that together. So I don't plan at this point making a third book in this series, in this area. But who knows? Let's see what people say, if people really like it, maybe I will. I have a couple ideas, but nothing like written in stone. I do have a couple other ideas that I've been kicking around for my next stories after this. But at least in the short term, I have some contracts with other creators that I have to fulfill, and I'm happy to do it because they have awesome properties. So I'll be working on those right after this one.
What I think you talked to us the first time that the first book took a couple of years to get it all going. What is your normal timeline now that you had more experience, like for this one, let's say?
So for this one, it took less. Of course, it's fewer pages. But now that I have a much better understanding of what to expect in the production process, not just the art itself, but I have a better understanding of what the printer's looking for, what the pages should be formatted as, and all that stuff. I don't have to try to figure out things like lettering anymore. I like to think I'm pretty good at it. So, like, that whole beginning to end of writing and drawing and lettering and then putting the files together for the printer, I feel very comfortable with, so it goes a lot faster. I try to keep track of how many pages I can do in a year, and that's gone up every year since I did the first book. So so I'm pretty happy with that.
That's good to know. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about?
No, I mean, you know, like I said, hope people go out and check out the book. It's got a couple of weeks left. Want to give a shout out again to my collaborators, Matthew Waterman and Joseph Cervalin, who really, really helped me out on this. And it was just a blast to put together and to do this book. You know, a lot of times when you're doing something for somebody or for money, your heart's not necessarily in it. You know, you're doing it because you're getting paid or whatever. But, you know, books like this that you get to put together yourself, you get that chance to really pour everything into it. So I hope that comes out in the final product.
Well, if it's anything like the first one, and so far what I've seen, it looks like it's improved on the first one. I can tell people that they're gonna like this story. Like I said before, not only does it look good, it's written well and has some great I don't want to say monster, I'll say ghost, and designs of the ghost. So yeah, you guys, if you're able to back it. If for any reason people who hear this afterwards were looking to be able to get this, are they able to get this, or is it something you need to get it right when it's available?
No, right. So because it is a graphic novel, I don't put really time limits on it. If you for some reason miss the Kickstarter that's happening right now, eventually I will put it on my store that I have currently. The URL is wormscrawlin.com. It takes you to my store, so eventually it'll be on my store. And then at some point, I will make a digital copy of it to put on globalcomics.com, but that's further down the road. So I haven't really put too much work into that part.
I prefer the physical copy. I'll prefer the physical copy over the digital copy any day of the week. However, my wife's not too crazy about having all the horror stuff around the house, so most sure. of the time I have to go digital. So it's fine if I have it on my phone, I guess. But
it's funny about that though, because people say that with the physical, you know, eventually when you have books, it takes up space in your house. But equally, when you just keep getting digital, you run out of storage space, or your storage space. So either way, your space is filling
and
up.
You know how, and for physical copies, you end up having to get a storage room. But with digital, you end up having to pay $2 a month to get more storage room in your on the drive or something. That's so right. It's the same thing.
That's right.
Yeah. So, no, but I want to thank you again for coming on, because, like I said, I enjoy your work, and I'm gonna try to be on Facebook more so I can see, because I think you had already launched this by the time I saw that you were about to launch it, I think, when I saw, and I was like, I just don't have the time to do it right then and there to try to schedule this, you know, interview here. Luckily, we were able to get it before the end of the project, and I'm gonna deeply try to get it, you know, I'm gonna try to get this out before the end of the campaign, but hopefully we can keep in touch, and the next time I'll get you in a month or so before, that way we can try to get it right on the launch date, and we can get people going to back this soon as possible.
Well, thank you for contacting me. It's always really great to come on here and speak with you about these things, so
thank you. And if you know anybody who would like to come on, anything that has to do with horror, just give them my information, and I'll be more than happy to talk to them.
Awesome, great, thank you.
I guess do you have any social media that you want to plug before we sign off?
Yeah, sure. So on Instagram, I'm Dan underscore Schmidt underscore art. On Facebook, you can find me. My Facebook page is Worms Crawl In, Worms Crawl Out. So just search for that. And then, like I mentioned, my website is wormscrawlin.com, and that goes directly to my store, where I'll be selling both books, actually, and maybe some other swag stuff later on.
Awesome. I'll make sure to put that in the description so that anybody who's listening can go in there and click on the links and either follow you or go buy the stuff from your store, even if it's after the campaign.
Great. Fantastic.
Great. Well, once again, thank you very much for joining us. And everyone out there, back this project if you're able to. If it's past the date, go to the site, because you're not gonna be disappointed by what you get from these two books. We'll leave it there, and we'll see you guys next time here on Nerd from the Crypt.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.